Absolutely, with our special guest tonight, Dr. Bruce Lipton, Spontaneous Evolution. And we'll be back with Bruce in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Okay, you know Bruce Lipton. Now comes his co-author in his book, Spontaneous Evolution, Steve Behrman, author, humorist, political, and cultural commentator. Now, he's been writing and performing enlightening comedy such as Swami Biyanananda, Nanawana, for more than 20 years. A pioneer in alternative education, a holistic publication, Steve is very active in transpartisan politics and the practical application of spontaneous evolution. He's joining us with Bruce. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing great now that I'm finally here. And by the way, the Swami is Biyanananda. It just kind of rolls off the tongue.
For me, it'll be just Swami.
Yeah, okay, we'll be doing tongue rolls later.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Bruce, we'll bring you in now, too, with us. How are you?
Right, I'm here. I'm excited.
And now tell me a little bit about your relationship with Steve. How did this all transpire?
Well, I was out on the road giving my lectures on the new biology and talking about fractal evolution, and Steve, through a connection of ours, showed up at one of the lectures, and I found out that he was working an idea about called the body politic, and I was talking about the political body, and at that point, the two of us got together and said, oh, wow, you know, if we can tie this biology into Steve's stuff about the new social patterns and organizations necessary for sustainability, we put these two together. And the exciting part about the book, it doesn't just say that a crisis is looming and it's coming, we know that, but it also offers us resolutions, a sustainable, positive future based on the nature of fractal biology and evolution.
Bruce is on a lot with us, Steve, but we should have you on every once in a while, too. We can use a little humor on this planet.
Well, you know, the thing is that in presenting ideas like this, which actually jar and change people's beliefs, to have a little bit of humor in there really enables people to develop the kind of flexibility that we need, because after all, we've been subject to these invisible beliefs that we mistake for reality, and yet they're only beliefs.
Absolutely. And tell me about yourself a little bit more than just the very brief bio we have.
Okay, well, actually, my background is in teaching. I taught in Washington, D.C. I started an alternative high school for high school students who are disaffected, and we ended up, my co-teacher and I ended up writing a book published by Simon & Schuster called No Particular Place to Go, Making of a Free High School, which was published back in the 70s. And then I taught in various places. I taught at Wayne State University, but I've always been interested. Now, when I first lived in Washington, D.C., I met somebody who was a world-famous expert on communal living, but nobody could actually stand to live with him.
When were you at Wayne State, by the way?
Oh, I taught at Wayne State in the mid-1970s. I taught in something called the Weekend College.
Amazing. I went to the University of Detroit.
Ah, yes, University of Detroit. I know it well.
Yeah, well, Wayne State is a great school. Madonna went there, I think, didn't she?
I think she went to Mount Madonna. No, she. no, I think she did. I think she went to UDC, University of Detroit.
Well, you know what? I think we need more teachers like you, Steve. You sound like you made the curriculum entertaining for
you know
people.
It's interesting. I was teaching primarily auto workers in this program, and they would bring their wives to class because we always had something interesting going on. And people talk about how people aren't ready to learn and that we've been kind of dumbed down and so on, and my experience has been just the opposite. My experience is that when you talk up to people and you give people something to actually be inspired by and to stretch them, people are capable of incredible things, including participating in this great evolution that we're in right now. And, you know, that's really one of the reasons why Bruce and I wrote this book, was to inspire people to participate at this time. The evolution is something that's not going to happen without our participation. And what it means is that in every phase of evolution, two things happen. There is an expansion of community. There's an expansion of awareness. And we're hoping that through this book, we can show people what the possibilities are if we were as smart as ourselves, if we were as coherent as ourselves and harmonious.
Your personality, and of course I've known Bruce for years with this program, your personality comes across to me as just bubbly and happy and spontaneous. I got to believe your life is nothing but positive.
Well, you know, I would like to believe that too. I think that in these times where there's plenty of stress, you know, we're really all having to stretch ourselves. I think this is a time, we talk about this planetary evolution, but really what we're talking about is individual change, and we're all up against our own individual programs and challenges. Having humor gives perspective, and it really allows us to look at our problems from a slightly different viewpoint.
Now, this is a family show, Stephen. So, give me a little bit of Swami. Give me an idea who he is.
Okay. Well, let's see if I can bring him on. Now, Swami is turban powered. That is, when he puts his turban on, that's how he gets his wisdom.
Okay.
So I'll bring him in. Okay. Well, hello.
Well, hi there, Swami. How are you?
Well, I'm very good. And, you know, it's great to be here. And you know what? We have no choice because no matter where we are, we're always here. And it is always now.
Could,
so would you like to be in the now more?
I would love to be in the now more.
Well, it's too late. It's already then.
You have imparted wisdom on us.
Well, yes. Well, little imparticles. They're called little imparticles of wisdom that we have. But there is some other wisdom that we have, and that is that we are all in this together. That is, we call this the one suggestion, because in this planet that we have right now, we have to love thy neighbor as thyself. Otherwise, there goes the neighborhood.
What if the neighbor is just a downright louse?
Well, you know, we do have sociopathogens in the body politic. Yes, it's true. And these people do need to be isolated. But the way that we isolate them is by focusing on what 95% of us who are not sociopathogens have in common. We call them the virtues and values that are shared by people who are traditionally religious, who are spiritual but not religious, who are ethical atheists, who are secular humanists, who believe in the golden rule, that the golden rule should overrule the rule of gold.
Stephen, Dr. Bruce and I have already said we're not going to get the swine flu vaccine. How about you?
Well, no, I definitely don't need the swine flu vaccine. I will channel Porky Pig to say, that's all, folks. No, I'm not going to get that.
Thank you, Swami, for being on the program, and you can go get Steve now.
Yes. Okay, well, the Swami, he's hovering here, and he will chime in whenever that's
appropriate
or inappropriately appropriate.
Bruce, with Steve and you writing this book, what different areas did you both look at? I mean, I've known you, Bruce, for years.
Well, my part was bringing in the nature of the human body as a community, because we see ourselves as single living entities, and the truth is we're actually communities of upwards to 50 trillion individual cells, and what becomes very important is that the cells are the living entities, and we, when we say that, is a global name for our community, and so it becomes understandable when you look inside the body. Here's a simple fact. That virtually every cell has every function that you and I have, George. I go through your body, respiration, digestion, excretion, reproduction, endocrine, even immune system. Virtually every cell has all that same thing. So cells are like miniature people. They work in a community. Cells have jobs. Cells get paid for their work. They don't get paid equally. Some cells have such a big job, they even have entourages to help them. But the whole point about it is there's a politics, there's an economy, there's a technology. And if you can get 50 trillion cells in a community to live in health and harmony and understand how the politics and economy of that system works, then what you're recognizing is we can get a few billion people on this planet to do the same. It basically reflects an old wisdom that said the answers lie within. And that's exactly what I was noticing, that as Steve added one day, it's like, besides the cells having jobs and health care and all that and no cell left behind, this is an opportunity to realize that in a fractal universe where where the structures repeat themselves in a self-similar fashion at any level.
Steve, I just had a report that the latest research shows that a tremendous majority of people no longer believe news is accurate.
You know, and, I just saw that today, 67%.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Course, well, the Swami calls the mainstream media the brainwashing machine stuck on spin. and I think that this is really very significant. The profound lack of trust indicates that the very institutions that are supposed to be serving us are actually failing us. Every institution, we could talk about healthcare, we could talk about banking, we could talk about schools, on and on and on and on. And it's because, as we point out in Spontaneous Evolution, these institutions are based on these misperceptions, these false beliefs that have been disproved by science and yet are part of the dogmatic religion of science, scientism. And so the reason why these institutions are failing, the reason why people are mistrustful of the government is because all of these institutions have they're perpetuating themselves like any living organism. They're organizations, and they're perpetuating themselves. And my early career was in teaching, and so I spent a year teaching in the public schools. And as any idealistic teacher that goes into the school system remembers, you go in there thinking that you're going to change something, and then after a period of time, you find out that you've been ground down, and the system persists. And it's not because people are bad intentioned. It's simply that the structure of those organizations are based on false premises, and they are becoming more and more obsolete. So it's understandable that people mistrust the government. They don't think the government is telling them the truth, and frankly, I don't think so either.
You know, and it's everything. It's a mistrust in government. It's a mistrust in mainstream media. They're starting to turn to the alternative media. We're kind of in that gray area, Bruce and Steve, in as much as we're on 525 radio stations. We're all over the planet. But our programming is more alternative than mainstream.
Definitely.
So I'd consider us, the alternative mainstream station here.
But, we call that in the book, George, we call it creative minorities. And creative minorities are the people that pull themselves out of the crowd and start to listen to a new plan, a new vision. And they're the foundation for where the new thoughts come from for the next level. Because if you play the same old stations, you're going to get the same old story, which is the story that has led us to this brink of extinction now. So your service is so critical because there's people that want to know, and that's what's part of this evolution is driven by. This is the first time people are saying, wait, there's more to this world than what I've been told or what I've been led to believe, and they're seeking, and I'm so glad that you're there because there's a source for their search.
And so, what we're finding, though, is with the distrust rising, the lack of confidence in government or mainstream media or maybe, their institution where they work, we're getting bigger and bigger and bigger. People seem to be turning. They need something to turn to, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And part of the reason why I'm involved in, when you did the little bio earlier, you mentioned transpartisan politics. I think that so many of these opposites, like the Democrats and Republicans, like the conservatives and the progressives, really, these are two functional impulses that are present in life. Just as we have growth and protection in biology, we need progressive and conservative. But they need to be dance partners instead of dueling dualities. And part of what's happening now and what we're suggesting in kind of the punchline of the book is that this is a time to integrate these opposites, these things that we thought were it's either this or that, and realize it's this and that.
It is this and that, and it's getting there. You both talk about in the book four myths or perceptions of the apocalypse. Explain that. You first, Bruce.
Well, basically what these are beliefs that we bought into and then guide our life by it, and that these were scientific principles at one time, and since then science has rewritten them, but the public is still following or being led down the old path. And so the four beliefs are, one, that the world, the universe we live in, is a Newtonian world, which means in physics, more of a material-oriented world, physical. So our perceptions in life are matter, physical, money, gold. These are the things people want, material possessions. And we've raped the planet to get all this matter out because we believe that matter is primal. And quantum physics came in 100 years ago and said, you know, that physical stuff is actually influenced by the invisible stuff, that the invisible realm called the field is involved with shaping matter. And it's interesting because physicists call the field the invisible forces that influence the material world, and spiritualists talk about spirit as the invisible forces that influence the physical world. And what we're beginning to see is a union of science and spiritualism, recognizing quantum physics as the medium. So all of a sudden it says, no, it's the non-tangible things that are what are relevant in our world, like love and harmony and peace and joy, the things you feel in your body. That's number one. Number two, the belief that we've been led down a path, and even though leading-edge scientists know it's not true, the public is still led to believe that we are victims of our genes. Genes control our lives, and your fate is some way predetermined by your genes, and you believe that. So if you believe you have cancer running in your family and you end up with cancer, you say, yeah, see, that was genetic. But now the new science of epigenetics reveals that your beliefs are turned into genetic activity. It's the equivalent of what's called the placebo effect or the nocebo effect, how your beliefs influence your health. That's two. So the difference in the second one is, no, we're not victims. We're masters of our lives. The third one is the belief that this world is based on competition, that Darwinian belief that we're in a struggle for survival, which keeps us armed, guarded, and on stress 24/7. Well, it turns out evolution is actually based on cooperation and community. So we're going 180 degrees off of the evolutionary tangent by our competition and fighting and our looking at scarcity and fighting over the pieces left over. So our whole culture has been wrong in that regard, that harmony and unity is where survival will come from. And the last one is the belief that that random mutations, random evolution occurred, and that we were just here by accident of genetic crapshoot. And it turns out, no, it turns out that organisms were designed to bring harmony to the environment. Every time an organism is introduced to the environment, it changes the balance a little bit, and then if it goes off balance, another organism is introduced to bring it back in balance. So then you say, so what was our purpose here through adaptive mutations, not random? And that is, as the Native Americans knew, our mission is to tend the garden. And here, look what we did to it. So you can see why the old beliefs have taken us down a path of self-destruction, and continuing those beliefs will, of course, lead us to that end. And yet, as you mentioned, and your audience is so critical in this, George, is that, okay, there's time for new beliefs. And the new beliefs, once they're installed, that changes the way we relate to each other and to the planet, and that spontaneous remission from the edge of this, what appears to be terminal phase, will happen virtually spontaneously.
Steve, what would you say to students nowadays, based on everything that's going on in this society?
Well, I think that in taking off on something you suggested earlier, George, in regards to how people are so mistrustful, I think that there's been kind of a disheartenment in the heartland. We have homeland security, but maybe we need heartland security in the sense that because of this emphasis on materialism that's been so pervasive that we imagine that that's what life is about, we've been subject to the three M's, money, material, and the machine.
Absolutely.
And consequently, there's a sense of disheartenment and disconnection, a loss of community. And so I think that at this point, I'm very excited when I meet young people and the young people I've met recently, I'm just so inspired by, because they recognize that they have to move beyond these polarized party lines of Democrat and Republican, conservative and progressive.
Could you say that, I'll ask you this when we come back, but do you think young people of every era was that way? We'll be back in a moment. And in a second, we'll be back with Dr. Bruce Lipton and Steve Behrman as we talk about spontaneous evolution. right here on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, have you picked up the After Dark magazine yet? Well, you can do so. You call 1-888-727-5505, or you can go online at coasttocoastam.com. Great stories of the supernatural, the unusual, and yes, science and the bizarre as well. What is that conference coming up, Bruce?
In Tampa in October.
I mean, exactly what is it?
It's all the different authors from Hay House, which a whole range of different authors, including people like Greg Braden, are presenting their stuff at one site so that a lot of authors show up at the same place.
Yeah, they have given us some great guests on this program.
I find them one of the most wonderful companies that I've ever worked for, and they're so consciously oriented, and the stuff that we talk about in our book about the new evolution, they're really exemplars of that.
Steve, you were saying that the young people of nowadays, you know, gives us hope for the future. But, you know, don't you think every young generation, even ours, you know, you and I grew up during the Vietnam days, you did too, Bruce, every young generation probably was hopeful for the future for us?
Well, I think that this generation that we're a part of, we definitely got things started. But things now are different in the sense, first of all, that the ways of communication, the internet, the how quickly you can access information.
Oh, my gosh. When Michael Jackson died, it was all around the globe in minutes.
Yeah,
minutes.
Well, in addition to that, there's so many other things that people are learning. And I think that, you know, characteristics of evolution is this communication, is this rapid communication. And, of course, you know, in terms of people not really believing what they see in the mainstream media, you know, there's so many different – I mean, the reason why your show is so popular is that people are curious. People are perhaps more curious than they've ever been.
Yes.
And that curiosity can be satiated and stimulated because, you know, there's so many secrets, so many of these secret spiritual practices and so on that were kept under wraps for centuries. And all of a sudden, you can now go learn these things. So I think that the quality of information, of course, there's, you know, certainly a lot of garbage out there, but the quality of information is such that young people now, and anybody really willing to apply their curiosity, can most definitely learn and connect, the power to connect through the internet, and of course, as we say, through the outer net, through people applying locally what we're learning globally, because really, if you can't do it in your own community, chances are it can't be done in the world.
Well, that's true. Bruce, what would you tell anybody who wants to change in this society today, how would they go about it?
Well, the first thing is we have to identify how we operate, and that's always been this mystery kind of thing, because if you ask the average person on the street, I say, well, who's running your life? And they say, I'm running my life. I'm the one who's, you know, making the plans and decisions and what I want to do. And I say, well, who is that I'm? When I get down to it neurologically, it's part of the mind, but it's part of what we call the conscious mind. And the conscious mind is the one that has our wishes and our desires and what we want. The other mind is more of a habit mind that you learn from your experiences and make habits. It's like the push-button mind where somebody says, oh, that guy pushed my buttons and all of a sudden my behavior went crazy. That's that mind, the habit mind. Well, we believe that we've been running our life with our wishes and desires from our conscious mind, and neuroscience now reveals that our lives are actually invisibly run by the subconscious programs 95 to 99% of the time. And then you say, well, why is that relevant? And the answer is this, two things. That the fundamental programs in your subconscious you downloaded from other people, they're not your beliefs, they're what you've downloaded from your environment, your family, and your community. And those beliefs become your invisible operating principle working in that subconscious. So most of your life is run from that, and because it's called subconscious, means you can't see it. And then that leads us, so what is the final problem? The problem is this. We believe we're running our life with our wishes and desires. When things don't work out, then we go and say, oh, my God, I'm a victim. It didn't, you know, like the forces of nature are against me. And now it turns out that we only run our life with our conscious mind less than 5% of the time. that 95% of our life are the habit programs, and those habit programs just play spontaneously and invisibly, and this becomes very critical, because if you don't see them playing, you don't see you're doing them. And if you don't see you're doing them, then you're like, hey, I'm just the innocent guy, and all of a sudden all this stuff came to me, and it's sort of like, oh, no. It was this subconscious stuff that got really involved. So the first step is that, how do we operate? And when we understand how we operate, then we get sort of like a manual to drive the body as a vehicle. And our driver education up to now has been totally destructive of our vehicles. And there's a new biology, and part of that's in our spontaneous evolution. It says, yeah, we need to participate in the evolution, and we've been programmed to be in the matrix. We're, you know, we're just playing out the programs that other people have put in. And it's interesting, because you just simply take a survey of the world and you say, what do you want, world? You got 7 billion people. Tell me what you want. And if you don't get 99%, you got 90% of the people say, listen, all I want is some peace and some freedom, a place to sleep, a job, you know.
Yeah. Maybe a little truth.
Yeah. Know? And so if you get 90% of the population that wants that, then you have to say, well, if we don't have that, well, it must be due to the very small percent that's left over. And that's what we're beginning to realize. We've been programmed with these cultural beliefs that are limiting, and that the new science is empowering, because it says, oh, my God, we have to change the way we've been living and get our power back.
How do you reach someone who just doesn't care? How do you do that?
Oh, that's a real hard problem, George. And the issue is, because we have so much compassion, it's just part of our humanity that you want to help people. And then we realize at some point, which I had to learn over my own career as well, people need help, and you go out and give them all the help you can get, and then you realize they actually were just using that energy to keep them where they were. Because if they didn't make up their mind to make the change, no matter how much you bring them to that water, they're not gonna drink the water. So the issues are, the only ones that make change are the individual.
And you know, the Swami does have a saying about changing the world. He says, there's no need to change the world. There's an easier way. All we have to do is toilet train the world, and we'll never have to change it again.
Yeah, maybe so. Swami might be right on that one.
But the idea is that in this process of, as we become aware of how we are programmed, an interesting thing happens, because we come to realize that most people are, you know, you're responsible for what you do once you realize you're responsible. But you're not to blame, that there's a sense of what we have in common is that we're all programmed. And we've all been programmed by fear, and it's not even a conscious thing. You know, Joseph Chilton Pierce says that that culture is just these fears, an aggregate of fears that are passed down unconsciously, and we adopt these behaviors based on something that happened centuries ago, and we don't even realize it. So the good news is, as we're waking up, what the Swami would call the upwising, as we're wising up, as we're waking up to this programming, we recognize that we indeed have much more in common. And as we step away from this matrix of beliefs that we've had that have controlled us, we recognize that even though we have these beliefs that separate us in the head, in the heart, we have this one trait that human beings have. Our perhaps one of our redeeming traits is love, and the ability to love the world, to love creation, to love ourselves, to love other people. And to begin to live out of that way, recognizing that that is our natural state.
I opened up a door today for a guy who was carting his little baby in a little buggy. You would have thought that nobody has ever done that for him before. I mean, it was just a reflex thing for me. You open the door and let him in. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it was amazing, the look on his face. I mean, he looked like no one has ever done that for him before. What's wrong with people?
Well, George, we've been so programmed to fear each other because we trust nothing and no one, that you live in your shell and you're on, you know, that stress guard of where's it coming from, because we've been programmed that it's coming. And that has been lethal to our biology and our physiology, and collectively that is destructive of civilization. And that's why I'm so excited that when people understand the mechanisms, then all of a sudden the future is so wonderful and bright. I just wanted to add something about young people, because it was interesting. Young people have a feeling of being totally disconnected from the system. You know, they can't really get the
job. They always did.
But I mean, in math now, we call these, they call them the alphabet generations, Generation X, Y, Z. You know, they go to college and then they work at Dunkin' Donuts or something like that. And the issue why that's important is they're playing a structured part of this evolution, a profound role in it, and it's this. If everybody holds onto the system for dear life, then it's very hard to change the system. But when you have more than 50% of the population doesn't care if the system's there or not, and that'd be the alphabet generations, then all of a sudden the system is very volatile and capable of radical change, because more than half the population doesn't care that it exists. And so these young people don't know that they're promoting our evolution, and they're going to get thrust into their hands this entire world. And it's so exciting, because they'll be doing jobs that we don't even know exist today in the next couple of years. So there's this rapid evolution, and I just wanted them to know that. And people recognize, yeah, it doesn't look good, especially for the young people, and yet the reality is, in a very short period of time, the tables will turn, and they'll be leading us into a new civilization.
How would you handle meeting someone who is one of those psychic vampires, one of those folks that, you know, you just had to keep away, way too negative? Would you try to change him, Bruce, or get away from him?
I would get away from him. And the significance is that was where we go back and say, well, you know, I would love to change a lot of things, but I can change myself. And the rest of that is up to other people. And so the best thing you can do is just disconnect. And it's very interesting, because all organisms on this planet communicate by vibration. Every organism, from bacteria all the way up to humans. As I talk about my lectures, there's two kinds of different vibrations, and we bring it up in the book as well, called constructive and destructive interference. What we could call them, and most people are familiar with, is called good vibes and bad vibes.
Right.
And what is that? That's a reading, and it's a reading out like a needle scale that goes from harmony to disharmony. And when everything has a vibration, and so the significance is, when you feel a vibration, you can read what if this is where you want to be or not by whether you're feeling harmony or disharmony. Nature, I mean, so like a gazelle doesn't have to walk up to the lion and go, are you my friend? It can feel the vibration from way over there, like, I don't want to be over there. Well, we have those vibes, but we've been programmed more or less in our world to ignore our feelings about things. And it turns out those feelings were the primal form of communication. You couldn't get ripped off if you could feel the guy already is like a predator sucking your energy out. You wouldn't be there. And so it goes back to, what would you do? When you feel that energy is not right, then you move away from the energy. And you'll start to gather with other people with similar energy, and all that good vibes will energize you and keep you alive.
What would you do, Steve? Same thing?
Well, I think it's important to recognize that each of us has a little bit of that, we can call it sociopathic energy and tendency, because of how we've been trained and programmed. So the idea is to not buy into it, to recognize these patterns. In a certain sense, I would say that I wouldn't even focus on bad people. I would say that there are these patterns of behavior. And we've been divided into groups, and we tend to ascribe negative behavior to groups of people we've been told that we shouldn't like, and positive behavior to our own group. And what happens then is that we fail to recognize our own shadow behaviors. We have this in our country, this whole issue about torture, you know, and the feeling of, you know, we don't torture except when we do. And it's uncomfortable to want to look at one's own tendency to buy into these behaviors out of fear. So I think part of this is as individuals begin to recognize where we allow fear and habit and programming to plug us in and in a sense allow us to do things that are against our better nature.
Yet at the same time, we also have to recognize that there's some people out there who truly are evil people.
Absolutely.
I mean, there's no, you know, I keep thinking about this, this episode with this little girl that was abducted, who is now a grown person, had a couple kids by apparently this alleged kidnapper, and now they're checking his backyard for two other missing girls. I mean, how evil can you get?
And I think it's very important that we begin to recognize this, but part of the damage that this programming has done to turn people against one another is that we defend ourselves against people who are like us. And because of that fault in discernment, we sometimes fail to recognize the true toxic people.
Bruce Lipton, priority one, what would you do? Somebody just went up to you and says, look, do whatever you need to do. Get this turned around. Fix it. What would you do?
Education. I would get people knowledge about themselves. Knowledge is power, and knowledge of self is self-empowerment. The knowledge that we've been given as to who we are gives us a vision of being frail and vulnerable entities, afraid of viruses and bacteria and stuff like that, when we are so powerful that it's hard to imagine. So, and you say, well, how did that happen? And it's very interesting because a great image of that is in India. When you want to train an elephant, you get a young elephant, you know, it's a couple of feet high. You tie a big rope on its leg and tie it to a stake. And for 2 months, that elephant is tied to the stake. And every day for 2 months, it tries to pull away from the rope. It keeps tugging the rope and pulling on the rope. And after 2 months, this elephant has learned, why do this every day? I can't get away. And so what it realizes, when the rope is on its leg, it can't move at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the elephant grows up. It's 12 feet tall. It's a monster. You can tie a rope on it into your house. It'll pull your house down. And yet, how do they keep the elephant still? They just tie a rope around its leg. They don't even tie it to a stake.
Yeah.
They just tie the rope.
Tie it around its leg.
And here's this monster, as timid as a mouse. And the fact is that it's the same thing that has happened to us. And it's time for us to get a real understanding of how truly powerful we are in not just creating our inner world, but how important our participation is in creating our outer world.
Well, we've been programmed, haven't we?
Oh, absolutely. That's the matrix. That's the whole matrix. We are living the matrix. And it's time to wake up. And waking up is, let me out of that trance. Turn off that damn television set and get away from this stuff, because they are pulling you in to play the game, and the only way to win this game is not to play it at all.
Hope, Stephen, do you have hope for the future?
Well, I think that I certainly feel that we have this tremendous potential right now, and you know, sometimes when you know, opportunity and crisis are really the same thing, and it really depends on our choices moment to moment. Do we choose to feed the wolf of love? Do we choose to feed the wolf of fear? Do we learn how to discern between the truly toxic forces around us and feed the healthier things?
Absolutely. Well said, indeed. Bruce, where do you get the book, Spontaneous Evolution?
I hope everywhere. For sure, Amazon and Barnes & Noble and most all the bookstores. It's out. It's a heavy book.
Oh, it is.
Oh, it's got 400-some pages in it. So it's worth the dollar. You get a lot more words for the dollar in our book. Big sale on words.
Well, good job with that. We're going to keep you, Bruce, for phone calls when we come back in just a moment right here on Coast to Coast AM with our special guest, Dr. Bruce Lipton, his co-author, Steve Behrman, as well. The website here, brucelipton.com, is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Final hour of the show tonight. Couple from now, we'll have open lines right here on Coast to Coast AM. If you need to email me, that's george@coasttocoastam.com. And just a reminder, if you can participate in our sponsorship for Children International, you will find the link at our website at coasttocoastam.com. Little blue button down there. Just click that, takes you to Children's International. Our goal through this holiday season is 250 children. And if you can afford this, I know things are tough right now, but this is $22 a month for about a year commitment. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.